This evening, we get to finish the last week in our series, Living Beyond Myself. I just love that title, because we're wanting to look not just at what makes us happy and focus on ourselves, but much, much further than that. And if you remember, right at the first week, Phil looked at the subject of Joseph's life and lessons that we can learn from there, which is a brilliant start. Wendy then went on and helped us by looking at removing obstacles that can get in the way, that can hinder us from fulfilling God's call on our lives. And tonight, in our series Living Beyond Ourselves, we want to look at the point where we reach a decision, where we make some choices this evening, where we stand before God and make some decisions about how we're going to live out through 2013 and beyond. Choices about whether this year will be one where you live for yourself and your own comfort and satisfaction, or whether you'll start to live for something broader and deeper than that. And the reason I want us to make some choices this evening is that no one ever really drifts into a sacrificial lifestyle. That only ever comes about through a conscious choice. I've got some friends at the moment who are on the post-Christmas diet. And if you've ever been on a post-Christmas diet, you'll know that you don't just stumble into it. You know, you don't suddenly wake up one morning and think, oh, I've only eaten lettuce and rice crackers for the past month. Oh, how's that happened? So similarly with an exercise regime, you know, you don't sort of wake up one morning and think, you know, I've just realized for the past 3 months I've been getting up at 6 a.m. and going jogging, and it's only just occurred to me. No, that happens through a conscious decision and then living it out. So I want to bring us tonight to something of a conclusion where you make those decisions and choices before God. And what I simply want us to do is look at Jesus' life, and particularly a period towards the end of his life, just one example where we can follow him. So we're going to look at a passage from John chapter 13. So if you've got a Bible, you might want to turn there. If you haven't, don't worry, because it's going to come up on the screen behind me. And we're going to read it through together. So this is John chapter 13. Just to briefly set the context, this is the Passover meal. So this is right before Jesus goes to the cross, where the disciples are gathered together for this big meal. And Jesus uses this as a teaching opportunity. It's a practical lesson, and class is in session. We're going to look at verse 3 onwards, okay? It says this: Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter. Whenever Simon Peter occurs, you know something's going to happen. And Simon Peter said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered him, what I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand. Peter said to him, you shall never wash my feet. You can imagine him saying it rather dramatically. Jesus answered him, quite patiently, if I do not wash you, you have no share with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus, I imagine, sighed at this moment and said, okay, the one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. He's making reference to Judas, who was also there. For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, not all of you are clean. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I wonder if you've ever been in a public setting where someone's done something which totally surprises you. Perhaps is even a little bit outrageous. And you're left thinking, what just happened? What have I just witnessed here? A friend of mine was in the States at a church meeting. And there's a guy at the front preaching, much like I am now. When suddenly a mobile phone rings and sort of disturbs things. And as people sort of look around, they suddenly realize that actually it's the speaker's mobile phone that is ringing. So he then proceeds to pull his mobile phone out of his pocket and answer the call. So he says to the congregation, just talk amongst yourselves. I've just got to take this call. And everybody sort of doesn't know what to do. They look at one another and think, awkward. And he has a chat on the phone and then hangs up the call. And he turns to the congregation and he says, that was my son on the phone. As his earthly father, I want to model to him that he can have access to his heavenly father at any time. So I've said to him, he can call me day or night and I will always answer his call. I don't know what to make of that story. Part of me thinks that's great and part of me thinks that's terrible. And I also know that some of you right now are thinking, I wonder if I phone PJ right now, will he answer my call? Just to let you know, it's on airplane mode. You don't stand a hope. I know what you guys are like, all right? The disciples are at the Passover meal, and what Jesus does shocks them like times 100, that incident that happened in the States. It was the custom of the day that the guests would have their feet washed. It was like a basic common courtesy. A bit like these days, if you have someone over for a meal, you might just take their coat from them, or a visitor might bring a little gift. It was that kind of basic common courtesy. Except there's been an oversight of some kind, because no one's washed the guests' feet. It was a real social faux pas, a big no-no. So at some point during the meal, Jesus decides that it's time to make this a practical lesson for the disciples. You see, he's got a message, but also a model for the disciples. He wants them to learn in different ways. And the message that he speaks about is this, is that we all get spiritually dirty. That's essentially what he's saying. We get physically dirty, yes, but also we get spiritually dirty on the inside. And he's saying there's a washing that only Jesus can do. Jesus says this in verse 8, if I do not wash you, you have no share with me. In other words, you and I can't have a relationship unless you let me wash you clean. One of the first things I became aware of when I gave my life over to Jesus is that he had cleaned me on the inside. The only way I can describe it is it was like a shower running through my heart, a power shower for the soul, if you like. Because you see, no amount of good deeds, church attendance, volunteer service, or generosity will make the slightest dent in your sin overdraft. You have always been in debt with no hope of repayment. There were only ever insufficient funds. I've heard Simon, I think, refer to it a bit like this. It's like we've got a pay-as-you-go mobile phone. My wife got a new phone for Christmas, but this is her old one. Some of you Apple addicts will be horrified just at the mere sight of this. It doesn't take photos. It won't hold any music, and you can forget about Facebook, okay? I know some of you just wouldn't even survive. But worse than that, this phone has no credit left. So it's effectively dead. It is pretty much useless. The Bible says that you and I, without Jesus, were dead. Dead in our sins, hopeless, helpless, couldn't do anything for ourselves. We couldn't do anything to sort out our situation. However, there is one call that this mobile phone would let you make, and that's the emergency call. In just the same way, you and I can make one call, one appeal, and that is to Jesus. And we can say to Jesus, will you come and wash me from the inside out? I know I'm dirty and messed up. I tried to do life my own way. It never worked out. I need you. It's at that point that God picks up on his end of the phone. And this evening, I want to give you the opportunity at the end to make that call and to have God respond to your appeal. And so just be having a think as we go through tonight, is that a step that I am ready to take for myself? So there's a message here that Jesus is wanting to communicate to his followers, that we need him to wash us spiritually clean. But it's not just about a message. There's a model as well. It's not just about what Jesus has done for us, but it's also about how we're to live from this point on. He's ransomed us. He's paid for us with a price. And now the question is, what do we do with our lives following that? How should we live out our lives now that he has come and rescued us? In other words, how do we do life being followers of Jesus? Because Jesus isn't just promoting a message, he's prompting a model as well. And it's at that moment the lesson becomes practical. You've got to realize that this is Passover. This is right before he goes to the cross, the night before. This is his last chance to communicate anything to his disciples. Time is short. From this moment on, every word, every action counts double. So how does he choose to use these final precious moments, these last teaching opportunities? Well, he does this. He picks up a bowl and a towel, and he steps out round to the disciples, and one by one, he works his way around the group and washes their feet. Imagine what that must have been like for a moment. This was the lowest of the low jobs. It was usually done by the poorest, lowliest servant of the household. Washing feet. Washing feet, that is grim. Some of you, you have to look away when you're washing your own feet, let alone somebody else's. Not only that, we're talking men's feet. Not women's feet that just always smell of strawberries and roses, but men's feet. Sweaty feet that have been walking in sandals for mile after mile. Sandals without socks, please note. That was a later heresy that came into the church. Walking along roads that were covered with animal dung in between the toes. You can picture the scene. It's grim. Men's feet. I've been in men's changing rooms. I've seen a lot of feet. And just working on the law of averages amongst a group of a dozen men, some of the feet I know are going to look like this. That's right. That's some of them are, yeah. I know. This one, this guy here, he has a problem of some kind, doesn't he? Those are hobbit feet. And tonight, I just feel like, at the end, we want to give an opportunity to pray for anybody with hobbit feet. Although we won't be laying on hands. So please make yourself available. You know it, don't you? Just in a group of a dozen men. It's going to be like that. The one at the top there. Just to say, Simon has trimmed his toenails since that photo was taken. So, just kidding. You just know, amongst a group of a dozen men, somebody's going to have a fungal infection. It's just a reality of things. That is what Jesus is having to do. I think we've got a blank screen now because some people are... Yeah, some people are close to passing out. Okay. But you get the picture, don't you? This is a terrible job. So the Saviour of the world, the most important person who ever lived, the one who created and holds together every cell in his disciples' body, is taking on the lowliest job of all and doing the lowest servant's role. Why has he done this? Well, it says in verse 15, I've given you an example. He's saying, being a follower of me means being a servant. It doesn't mean fame. It doesn't mean glory. It doesn't mean comfort. It doesn't mean appreciation. It just means service. Not doing service once and then dropping it, but a lifestyle of service. It means to be a servant. It means being prepared to do the lowliest, dirtiest jobs without thanks or applause. It means to be a servant. Are you a servant? If I was to ask a dozen of your friends, would that be one of the adjectives they use to describe you? Oh, he's a real servant. Or she's a real servant. Or would they use some other terms? Of course, Peter, it would be Peter, wouldn't it? He has a problem with this. Ever the master of understatement, he says, you shall never wash my feet, to Jesus. Of course, 2 minutes later, Jesus is washing his feet. He doesn't want Jesus to wash his feet because Jesus is the rabbi. He's the teacher. He's the head man. And surely he is far too important to do a job like that. Surely he's too significant to take on a servant's role. You see, Peter has a hierarchy, a pecking order of different jobs and roles. And the more important ones, well, they're the ones like teaching and speaking. And then there are the less important jobs, like tidying up and cleaning. And what needs to happen, therefore, is that the most important people do the most important jobs, and then the least important people do the least important jobs. So when the most important person in the room comes and does the least important job, it bakes his noodle. It fries his circuits because this does not compute. This should not be. This doesn't seem right to him. Why doesn't it seem right? Because he's fallen for the lie that our value is linked to the role that we do. In his world, what I do says something about how important I am. Any one of the disciples could have picked up the bowl and the towel, but they didn't, because every single one of them thought the job was beneath them. They're the main men. They're the disciples. They hang out with Jesus all the time. Maybe Peter's thinking, I'm not just one of the disciples, I'm in the top three. I'm far too important to take on that role. I wonder if we're so very different. Maybe we think to ourselves, well, I used to serve on the stewarding team, but now I'm a small group leader, so I've kind of graduated. Help out in the King's Kids. To be honest, I didn't do my degree just to go and cut out bits of paper for small children. Car parking team, well, that's not really my kind of thing, because you've got to understand, I've got a different measure of gifting. I'm able to preach and teach. Serve at the Friday night outreach meeting, well, that's not really for me. Because you see, people are starting to recognize my prophetic gifting, and I've got a bit of a ministry that's growing here. Of course, we would never say those things, but my question is, what's in your heart? What's going on in there? What's the way that you think about these things? Because guys, we've got to realize we follow a foot-washing king. There is no pecking order. There is no hierarchy. Your value is determined by who God says you are, not what you do. Doing basic menial tasks doesn't diminish your importance. It merely identifies you with Jesus, which, by the way, is a good thing. It doesn't affect who you are on the inside. It doesn't affect your status or standing before God. You know, last week, I was clearing snow in the car park and stacking tables. This week, I'm stood on a platform speaking. People, the pay is the same. The pay is the same. Isaiah 49 says that what is due to me is in the Lord's hands. My reward is with my God. The pay is the same whether I'm shoveling snow or standing on a platform. God sees, God knows, and he will one day reward me. And I've got a choice. I can either live for the appreciation and applause of man, or I can live before an audience of one and say, God, I'm doing this for you, and you see, and one day you will reward me. And I can have thanks and praise now, which is temporary and fleeting, or I can have something that is of eternal significance. When I stand before my Lord and he says to me, well done, good and faithful servant. If personally, I'd rather have something for eternity than something fleeting and temporary. What is it you are living for? Who is it you are living for? If Jesus asks you to do something, are you prepared to do anything for the one you love? Or is there a certain standard? And I don't want to do that. That's not for me. One good way to know where you're at is what I call the carpet cleaning test. A few months back, now bear in mind this doesn't happen often if you're thinking of signing up for King's Kids. A few months back, one of our little toddlers, bless her, became a bit unwell and threw up in the creche. And so I imagine that somebody comes up to you, perhaps somebody from the serving team, they come up to you with a bowl and a cloth, and they say to you, look, would you mind? Could you just go and help clear that up for us? My question should be, what would be going through your mind? Would it be, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to help, but have you got any rubber gloves? Or would it be, why do you come and ask me? Surely we've got stewards for that kind of thing. Which would it be? Because if it's the latter, then that reveals something of where your heart is at. You see, if foot washing wasn't beneath Jesus, then nothing is beneath us. There is no hierarchy of roles. There is no role that is more important or less important than another. And we need to get our security from him and not from what people see us doing. Because that's such a false way to live. Then in the last part of this passage, Jesus says this, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. It's not just enough to know about the towel and the bowl. It's not enough to be able to see them and say, oh yeah, I've read this passage. I know, I'm familiar with that. We actually have to get to the point where we pick up the bowl and the towel and do something with them. Notice the blessing isn't in knowing about it. Jesus says, you're blessed if you do them. Jesus says it's better to do these menial acts of service than just to know about them. That there is a blessing that comes. It's a better way of doing your life. You see, when we serve, we get involved. And when we get involved, it commands a blessing from heaven. Last summer, my son's football team managed to make it through to the cup final of the North Bedfordshire Under Nines group or something like that. And it was a clash of the titans. My son's team, Oakley Rangers, against arch rivals, Bromham United. It was a tense one. A local derby. You probably heard about it. They played the game with an odd formation. My son, Nathan, was the lone defender. So they played one person in defence, which isn't good for my blood pressure. It was a tight match because it was to-ing and fro-ing, end-to-end kind of stuff. And the whole time, you know, I'm shouting, well, encouragement from the sidelines to my son and trying not to shout too much advice to the referee. Just the whole time thinking, you're a pastor, watch what you say, you're a pastor. And just, you know, that going through my mind. But in the end, the Oakley Rangers just managed to clinch it with a 3-1 win over Bromham United. Yeah, the crowd went wild. Both of us, very excited. And we just loved every minute of that. But as exciting and wonderful as it was for me, I wonder who got the most satisfaction. Was it the parents on the sidelines? Or was it the boys on the pitch? You see, I think the boys on the pitch had the best time that afternoon. Jesus is saying that true fulfillment comes not from when we spectate, but when we participate. The thing about this is that we all get to play. We all get to be involved. If the church is God's rescue plan for humanity, which the Bible says it is, then we all get to play a part in that rescue plan. We get to contribute. We get to be on the pitch and do stuff. What a privilege. I kind of think to myself, what's wrong if you don't want to be involved? There's something wrong in the wiring there. Because this is a chance to be involved in something that will be of eternal significance. This is not just about life and death for people. It's about where they'll spend eternity, and we get to play a part in that. People, we're not just trying to fill some rotas tonight. Rather, it's this. I want you to make the most of your one and only life. And I believe you can't invest your life better than to throw your all into the local church. Many of us here know about this. It's the next step of living it out. Maybe you've been coming along to King's Arms and you kind of drift in. You come some weeks and not other weeks. And somebody would ask you, part of us, you'd say, kind of. Perhaps tonight God's got you here so that you reach a decision point where you say, I'm either in or I'm out. And if I'm in, I'm going to be really in. And I'm going to get plugged in and go to a small group and serve my socks off and make something of this life. Be part of something that is bigger than just me. Because we've got to realize that what Jesus is saying is in stark contrast to what the world says. The world says this. Advertising and media constantly says that we must accumulate, consume stuff, have experiences, and be served in order to be satisfied. That deep joy is found from getting possessions and gathering experiences. In order that we have to receive all that the world's got for us so that we can be happy. It's such a big, fat, hairy lie. Did you know that the United Nations has ranked British children as the unhappiest children in all of the industrialized world? Why? Because according to the UNICEF report commissioned to look into this, it says this, British children are trapped in a cycle of compulsive consumption as parents shower them with gifts to make up for their long working hours. While children would prefer time with their parents to heaps of consumer goods, parents seem to find themselves under tremendous pressure to purchase an excess of material goods for their children. Parents in the UK almost seem to be locked into a system of consumption, which they knew was pointless, but they found hard to resist. That's a damning indictment, isn't it, on our society? We expect to be able to have more of everything, and that having more will make us happier. But the reality is, the pleasure we get from that next new thing quickly recedes. And so we suffer from diminishing returns because having more doesn't satisfy. It kind of reminds me of the story of King Solomon, by far the wealthiest man in the Old Testament, who made an art form out of consumption. Ecclesiastes 2 says this, says of him, he says, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure." He's a man of unparalleled resources, hard to compare even in our society today, even amongst the billionaires that are around. You see, Solomon lives life full and large. He spares himself nothing. He builds himself palaces, has horses and vineyards and alcohol like a river. He has musicians who play at his every command and sexual promiscuity on an epic scale. And after years and years of throwing himself into this binge of self-gratification and to unimaginable proportions, he sits back and surveys the results. And he says this, "When I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless." He had people to serve his every whim, and yet his happiness bucket was still empty. And in some senses, we've become a nation of Solomons. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not wrong to have nice things. The problem is when the nice things have us. That's when the issue comes. And of course, the danger is that we drag those same values into church with us. That church, rather than being a radical family engaged on a mission, becomes the place where we sit back and we expect to receive a certain quality of religious goods and services each week. And then if the quality of the service we receive doesn't quite match up to our expectations, well, then at that point we're entitled to feel disappointed or let down. We start to think to ourselves like, well, how good was the worship this morning? Rather than, did I really worship this morning? Or we ask ourselves questions like, how well did the preach entertain me? Rather than, how much did the preach change me? We sit there and we think to ourselves, what can I get from this experience? Rather than, what can I give to this? And then small inconveniences start to take on disproportionate significance. Now, the seats are a bit firmer than I'd like. Or, you know, the donuts were a little bit staler than I'd like. Or the coffee was a little bit cold. And we spend our time majoring on the minors instead of investing our lives in the things that really count. The trouble is, living to receive ultimately leaves us feeling totally empty. It's a false promise. Jesus says there's a better way. There's a more blessed way to live than that. And that's what the choice is for us tonight. He's saying it works better when we get involved. That's when we reach a point of satisfaction and fulfillment. When we start to contribute, not just consume. You know, I spent the summer after I finished my degree in Brazil, and I was part of a team working for an aid organization called Tear Fund out there. And we were working on a building site, constructing a new orphanage that was right next door to an old orphanage house. And these orphans were kids that were taken from the most deprived backgrounds in the shanty towns around Sao Paulo. And I remember turning up on the team, you know, I was keen as mustard. You know, sadly, my abilities with DIY have always let me down. My aspirations far exceed my abilities. And I spoke with the team leader and said, you know, anything you want me to get involved in, you know, I'm happy to have a go at most things up, you know, carpentry, plumbing, electrics. How hard can it be? You know, and he did a quick assessment with me and then had me stirring concrete in a trough for the next 6 weeks. That's where I was at. So me and this other guy just stirring concrete for 6 weeks. And what we would do is mornings we'd be on the building site, do the concrete stuff. Break times, we'd hang out with the orphan kids and play games with them and muck about, and then back on the building site in the afternoon. I remember very clearly on the flight home, our flight left from Sao Paulo and then it did a short flight to Rio. And when it landed in Rio, it took on board all of the holidaymakers who had spent the past 2 or 3 weeks on the beaches around Rio and that kind of area. And I remember thinking on that flight as it left, I wonder amongst the passengers here who had the best summer. You know, was it the people who basted themselves on a beach for 2 weeks? Or was it our little team who stirred concrete for a month and a half for a bunch of orphans? I tell you, I think I had the best time. Again, it's not wrong to have nice holidays, that's great. But ultimately, the best satisfaction comes when we invest ourselves in something. When we live to play a part, not just to receive. I got to play. And ever since then, I've got to play a part in local church. Doing big upfront stuff and small unseen things behind the scenes. And the wonderful thing is that God can take even the simplest acts that we might do, even the most sort of basic and menial tasks, and use them for his glory. It's not like we're just, you know, throwing things into a void. God is taking our little acts and using them for his purposes. One last story for you. In 1934, a traveling evangelist by the wonderful name of Mordecai Ham visited, if your parents looking for children's names, there you go, right there. Mordecai Ham. And this guy was traveling around and he was doing a series of meetings in Charlotte, North Carolina in the States. And two young 16-year-old lads decided that they would go along and listen to Mordecai Ham speak. So they turned up at this little church building where he was speaking, but they got there a little bit late, and the building was absolutely packed to the rafters. And the two of them had a quick look around, but couldn't see any spare seats whatsoever. So they started to make their way out of the building. When one of the stewards saw them just about to leave, he said to them, "Look, lads, don't go. I'll find you two seats, don't worry." So he leads them right down to the center aisle and sits them in the middle of a row. Anyway, the meeting continues, and at the end of the meeting, Mordecai Ham gives an opportunity for people who want to respond to Jesus and to follow him. And these 16-year-old lads make a commitment to follow Jesus, which they then live out. What you may not know is that one of those boys was a lad by the name of William Graham, or as he likes to be known, Billy Graham. And over the subsequent decades, God used Billy Graham to reach literally millions of people, that's no exaggeration, around the world. I tell you, I'm so grateful to God for that unknown steward who turned up early, put some chairs out, and then saw two lads who were about to make their way out and sensitively drew them to a seat. We don't know the impact that our little acts of service may have. But God does. He sees. And put together, he uses them for his glory. I guess tonight I want to ask you, what's it going to be? Bottom line, when all's said and done, are you here to contribute or are you here to consume? Now don't get me wrong, if you just want to come in and listen to worship and preach and eat a donut and go home every week, you are most welcome here. You are still welcome here. But I guess I'm saying there's more for you than that. Will you invest your life for something that really counts? Because the greatest satisfaction comes when we get to play our part, however big or small we may think that will be. And as we do that together, then God begins to extend his kingdom step by step. And we begin to reach this town and the towns around us, and even the nation and the nations.